All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our next guest is Greg Mitchell. He's the author of the book Hiroshima in America, as well as So Wrong for So Long, and many others. He's the former editor of Editor and Publisher, and now he writes the Media Fix blog for TheNation.com, a new edition of his book, The Campaign of the Century, Upton Sinclair's Race for Governor of California and the Birth of Media Politics, winner of the Goldsmith Book Prize, has just been published by Polypoint Press. Welcome back to the show, Greg. How are you?
Always happy to be here.
Oh, and there's, I would be very remiss if I didn't mention that you're the most prolific Twitterer in the history of Twitter.
And that's not quite true, but I and I'm not sure that's a compliment, but
no, it
will,
is. No.
Take it the right way.
I follow your links quite often. In fact, I don't spend that much time on Twitter as much as I did before, but certainly you're one of the highlights of it, no doubt about
okay.
that.
Okay, so I appreciate
it. I wasn't poking fun.
Okay.
all right, so you've been live blogging WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
So I guess you just got that Google alert, or you just re-click Google News for WikiLeaks every couple of minutes, and you get everything, right?
Well, that's not quite how I do it, but I do. I've been doing it for 38 days now, which someone said must be a record for live blogging on any one subject. Although someone added that that's only true because. Blogging didn't come around until after the O.J. Simpson trial.
Oh, right.
but in any case, it's been 38 days, and I keep expecting each day will be the last, that the interest will fade or, you know, the popularity will fade, but somehow it seems to keep growing. It's been the number one or number two most popular feature at the Nation site for over 5 weeks now. So
that's very good to hear.
Yeah, so certainly people who care seem to care even more. So I'll keep going until we run out of items or run out of interest.
Right. Well, I sure hope the interest stays. You're not going to run out of items for quite some time. It looks like they're still have only released, 2,000 documents?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to say what's happening with the documents. I mean, it's gotten interesting the last couple weeks. You know, the first 2 or 3 weeks, it was kind of easy to follow them because the partnership that Assange had made with the top news outlets, and so the cables were all coming out from them. And then you know, this Norwegian paper got a hold of the whole thing, and others have been dipping into it. So now every day you're seeing very little from the New York Times and the Guardian now. And you're seeing new things every day from more far-flung sources. So in some ways it's a little harder to cover, but we're still getting a lot of really interesting items. And it really is impossible to judge what's in the other 249,000 cables. It may be it's all junk. It's minor, super minor stuff. It's stuff that that has no interest at all, or it's taking so long for people to get through them. You know, we're going to keep having things for months and months out of it, so we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, a big part of your career or their editor and publisher was media criticism and kind of lambasting newspaper editors for getting things wrong and that kind of thing. And, you know, I wonder about your sort of big picture take on the way at least the elite in the American media are treating this story.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's, you know, I've followed WikiLeaks carefully all year. And, you know, earlier in the year, earlier last year through, you know, middle of the year, the newspapers were covering WikiLeaks. They were running exclusives. They were, you know, getting access to the material. But the latest Cablegate release found them in kind of full partnership. Not only did they embargo everything until, you know, the same hour or the same day, but, they vetted the cables. In fact, WikiLeaks turned over to them the right and responsibility to vet the cables. WikiLeaks, I really hasn't published, you know, until recently, was not publishing anything on their own. They were sort of republishing the cables that had been vetted by these top news organizations. It's only been in recent days that we're seeing as more of a freelance approach. So on the one hand, they've had this growing partnership with these top news outlets. On the other hand, these news outlets seem to be turning against them more and more in their coverage, critical of Assange, critical of some of the moves he's made in relation to this rape charges and so forth, and many in the media not jumping on board the defending WikiLeaks, right to publish and right to leak and First Amendment rights in the U.S. and a lot of people in the media wouldn't be totally upset if he got extradited to the U.S. and put on trial and so forth. So it's been a very, very odd relationship with the media throughout.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, it seems like if the government says, oh, well, this is clearly just the act of enemies of America and they must be destroyed or stopped somehow, that at least in terms of the cable TV news anchors, excepting, Keith Olbermann or whatever, but, you figure the average news reader types on CNN,
Yeah. They
just completely buy into that narrative, as Glenn Greenwald puts it. Assange is Saddam Hussein. He must be hunted down to his last Heidi spider hole.
Well, I don't know whether you follow the it's really almost Daily Show-ish or Saturday Night Live, this whole thing with Judy Miller, who was probably did more harm than anyone with her false Iraq WMD stories for the New York Times, coming out and slamming Assange for not verifying his sources. And then today she was asked to explain that, and she sort of again defended the New York Times, of course, verifies and we check our sources and we take this seriously, and Assange just puts these leaks out. And of course it was her fake sources and her horrible sources that led to so many false stories and essentially led to the war. So, to this date, no one has been able to find a single person who has died because of any of the WikiLeaks leaks. While one might say that Judy Miller has, helped lead to hundreds of thousands of people in Iraq dying.
Yeah, well, and there's really no doubt about that, considering the central role she played in laundering a lot of those lies from Ahmed Chalabi and them into the New York Times, as you reported, really, I think, in real time back then, right? I mean, were critical of her even in 2002.
Editor and publisher was, I'm sort of proud to say, was among the few mainstream media outlets who, from the get-go, were, suspicious and critical of how the press was handling the run-up to the war, and then covering the war in its early months and years when, they were sort of making light of the problems and what would be happening in the future and progress and. I know I took a special interest in military suicides and what was happening with our soldiers and the psychological problems and so on and so forth. So for several years there, we were in the forefront of probing the official narrative that was coming out of the U.S. media.
Mm. Well, now, on the subject of the week, and that's all true, by the way, because I was here and I was reading that stuff and interviewing Greg about it on the show. Not way back to 2002, but still. Anyone could have gone to antiwar.com and found links to your work back then. I'm interested. I know that you pay close attention to the editorial pages and kind of the consensus among newspaper editors. And I wonder whether you found any kind of gruff, hard-nosed old reporter types in charge of these editorial pages who, really are taking a firm stand in favor of not necessarily the content of the WikiLeaks or anything else, but on the right of WikiLeaks to publish this information.
Well, there hasn't been too thunderous,
I mean, there's got to be a couple of heroes in there somewhere, Greg.
Most of the top editorial pages and most of the top columnists are steering clear. It is kind of amazing that there's this great kind of gap. It's better, I guess, than if they were all critical. Basically what we're seeing is a lot of critique, some support, and this vast middle ground of silence. So I think that's the most common characteristic right now.
All right. Hold it right there, everybody. It's Greg Mitchell from TheNation.com. We'll be right back. All right, everybody. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm on the line with Greg Mitchell. He's writing in real time. He's blogging the WikiLeaks. Day 38, or is it 39 now, at thenation.com. All right, so tell me.
I just posted a new item during your commercial break there. So
oh, there you go. Well, I guess I need to hit refresh on this thing, don't I? All right, so tell me about Bradley Manning, because it goes without saying on this show, although I like saying it, that this is an American hero. It's obvious from what's been published of the chat logs that he had the highest whistleblowerish motives in doing what he did. And he's just like Daniel Ellsberg, and I'm very concerned that he's being mistreated. And Glenn Greenwald wrote a piece. His lawyer, I know, has done an interview with the Daily Beast and wrote a couple blog entries, and I was just wondering if you can keep us up to date on what you know, or at least what journalism has, what more journalism has been published about the treatment of Bradley Manning in military custody.
Well, up close, as I feature in my blog, there's been periodic blog postings by his lawyer, David Combs, so you can find him on Twitter, but he just every few days he posts something, and it's usually legalities, what are possible routes they may take, and looking at the military law and things like that. So it's a little technical, but it's certainly relevant to the case. I'm sorry, his name escapes me now, but there's a fellow who knows Manning, is a friend of his, who's visited him in prison a few times, who writes this stuff gets picked up at Fire Dog Lake first. I think it may get picked up elsewhere after that. But every week or two, he writes something, maybe after he's visited Manning, about actually what his conditions are. And that's certainly the most up close and personal look at it. And, you know, according to him, you know, Manning doesn't particularly like to talk about his conditions, but he's talking about it more now than he used to. And apparently, mainly what he does is refute some of the claims when people made charges about his confinement and what he was allowed to do and not allowed to do and so forth. The military would sketch out things that, made the treatment look not so bad, and then Manning would, refute some of the details. So that's probably about the only way you can really follow it. Otherwise, it's just it's a groups protesting or groups who are saying that he's been held too long without trial, or he's being held in solitary beyond all fairness, and or speculation on whether they're trying to break him so that he fingers Assange. And then a lot of stuff came out last week that they're very, very, very well maybe no link to Assange, as Assange has claimed. So it's an interesting case, but so little has come out because of nothing much has happened in the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, just now you're referring to when Glenn Greenwald called out Wired for not mm-hmm. verifying or disputing whether it was in the chat logs
right.
What Adrian Lamo had claimed about what Bradley Manning had claimed to him about
right.
his working with Julian Assange on the leaking itself. And this goes right to the heart of something that I have to assume you're an expert in, which is the right of the press in this country to publish what they want without prior restraint, without being prosecuted for it. They can't figure out what law to prosecute him under, other than maybe he conspired with Manning to actually do the leak in the first place.
Right. Well, that's some people in the media draw a distinction. They say, well, Assange is a mixed bag. WikiLeaks has done some good things, et cetera, but Manning's all bad. Maybe some of the people do it in a way to sort of say, well, I want to give some support for Assange, and so I'll do that by calling for the hanging of Manning. So they're making a big distinction. Now others, may feel that both of them are heroes, or some of them may feel that Manning's a hero and Assange is kind of a wild man. But the fact remains that the media has had a difficult time dealing with this whole thing. But part of it is because so little evidence has been presented. In fact, it's sort of assumed that Manning is guilty. So you don't know 100% sure that that's true. Second, you don't know whether he did some of the things that he's being charged with and didn't do others. And then, of course, it gets into, his motivation and so on. And then, of course, it comes back to the why did he have access to this material? Maybe he did the country a favor by pointing out the security lapses. Maybe it was better that he blew the whistle on this rather than, Iranians or some other people getting access to the material. So You know, it's a very complex case, and so it makes it interesting to follow every day. But it is also maddening because in the case of Manning, you know, we know so little about the actual charges, and we don't know whether it's this one, you know, the one Lamo is really the only witness against them, or the only evidence that emerged is, you know, stuff that's come out because of that, or whether there's all kinds of other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, aside from the whole Julian Assange is a terrible evil culprit narrative on TV, it doesn't seem like they've really let the WikiLeaks change the narrative about any particular thing. So, like, if there's important news about Diego Garcia or about Somalia or about Yemen, I guess the Yemen right. broke news a little bit, but if there's something counter to the narrative, say, for example, about Somalia, that Dick Cheney and George Bush and Condoleezza Rice hired the Ethiopians to invade, basically cajoled them into invading Ethiopia Christmas 2006. If that's not part of the media narrative, it doesn't matter that it's in the WikiLeaks. You can find it at foreignpolicyinfocus.org or FPIF.org on their blog, but that's about it.
Well, it's, you know, in the U.S., and I think this was the New York Times approach to the cables. They, you know, they ran hot and heavy with these cables for 10 days. And
spun it all against Iran, and then
virtually
dropped it.
All of it virtually all of it was focused on areas that the U.S. was strongly involved, where you could look at them and say, "Yeah, this could have big impact for the U.S. or this is how the U.S. would implicate it, or what the U.S. is going to cause trouble for the U.S. or whatever." But since then, they've had very little of the what you might call international stuff. Now, the Guardian kept that going for a couple weeks beyond that, and they've had, and they still have some stuff, and they tend to not care if there has any particular fallout for the UK. You know, it just would be some fascinating or nasty story involving some far-flung country that, you know, it should be of global interest, but is not really, UK-centric. And now, you know, now we're seeing more and more of these cables emerging from widely scattered places. And, you know, particularly if you're an international buff, you know, you find fascinating any revelations, whether it's about Tunisia or Zimbabwe or you know, Somalia or Canada for that matter. But they're not mainly, they're not the U.S. flashpoints of Iraq and Afghanistan and so forth. So, so that's the way it's kind of shaken down. And you could argue that, you know, Americans just, you know, aren't much interested in international things. They're not outraged unless something's, I mean, look at Afghanistan. We've been there for all these years, and you still, it's hard to get a rise out of people about, the, you know, the massive number of deaths and money and everything else that's being spent there. So how are we going to get them to care about some other spot in the world where we're not occupying?
Touche. He's right. You got to be the demand for them to be the supply. Well, thanks for being the supply. I really appreciate it. Greg Mitchell, blogging at thenation.com. Thanks again.
Okay, thank you.